Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Nastor.
Hey, hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur, and I am your host, John Nastor. Thank you so much for stopping by. I truly appreciate it, and I hope that you're safe out there, and I hope that you are enjoying your summer wherever you happen to be. So about 3 years ago, my guest was working in his family-run e-commerce business when a thought struck him. Why isn't there a simple service to hire writers to write articles? Using what he likes to call decision velocity, he jumped on the idea and took action. Today, he's a co-founder and head of marketing at Content Cucumber, where they simplify content creation and enable companies to get content on demand. Now, let's hack. Chris Chasteen. Time and place is everything, especially in marketing. But in today's age of a million messages per minute and not enough hours in the day, how do you really catch people's attention? Fortunately, there's a simple way. LinkedIn can help you speak to the right professionals at the right time. With over 62 million decision makers on LinkedIn, you're able to connect with the right business leaders who are relevant to your company. And with LinkedIn ads, you can make sure your messages are getting through to those relevant people. LinkedIn's targeting tools help you focus on reaching your precise audience down to their job title, company name, location, and more. Here's the thing. People on LinkedIn want to learn. They're on it to grow. In a recent survey, 71% of people said they use the information they find on LinkedIn to inform their business decisions. Marketing on LinkedIn means you get to tap into that hunger to know more. Try it for yourself. LinkedIn right now is offering a free $100 LinkedIn ad credit to launch your first campaign. Simply visit linkedin.com/hack. That's linkedin.com/hack. Terms and conditions do apply, but head over there right now to get your free $100 ad credit off your first campaign. And we are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very special guest. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, John.
Awesome, man. Absolutely my pleasure. Glad you're here. This was kind of on short notice, so I think it's going to be interesting. And I've been looking forward to this all day. So let's just jump into it, shall we?
Yeah, let's do it.
Chris, as an entrepreneur, let's start here. What is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Decision velocity is among the top things. This doesn't work all the time, but for the most part, I can tell you that deciding to move forward on something, whether you have gathered all the facts or not, has worked for me on many occasions.
Decision philosophy?
Decision velocity.
Velocity,
so,
there we go.
Yes. So making decisions very quickly. And this is a concept that I've heard other people discuss before, but the philosophy behind it is you might have 10 decisions that you have to make, and the faster you can make your way through all of those decisions, the closer to your end goal you will be.
Yeah, I like it. And so you have to be comfortable with making a decision based on all the information available to you right now and being comfortable with the fact that that will not be all of the information available ever.
Right. Yeah, like say you make 5 decisions and 2 of them you were wrong and you made the wrong decision, but 3 of them you were right. As long as you're averaging higher than, as long as the amount of decisions that you're making, as long as more of them are right than wrong, then you're on the right path.
Can this coincide or somehow get mixed with like the shiny object syndrome and not really thinking about things and just like seeing something else and going for that?
Yeah, so that's exactly right. So I think that the shiny object syndrome, if manifested properly, becomes decision velocity. So if you apply that same, what is a problem that a lot of entrepreneurs like myself struggle with, you can actually apply that same mentality to this idea of, well, okay, you have these, like this like need to go and move and break things. It's like, okay, well, maybe there's some areas inside of marketing or branding or product development that you could go and do that same thing, and it would have a much bigger impact on your business.
That makes sense. That makes sense. So when it's manifested properly, shiny object, it allows you to, or enables you to then take control of this decision velocity. Is this something that sort of was like innate within you, Chris, or is it something you've learned that you needed to sort of adapt and nurture?
It depends on the subject matter. Inside of like marketing, for example, I was always naturally quick at thinking because it's a very creative thing. And so because I apply such creativity to marketing, I don't really worry whether I made the wrong choice. Like when we make a video or we come up with an idea for a blog or whatever, I don't second guess whether that was the right topic or the right video. We're just going to publish it. Whereas like maybe in finance or some other areas where it's, you know, reviewing every subscription on the, you know, balance sheet or whatever, it's like, what should we cut? I might be like second guessing things. So it's harder to apply in some areas for me than others, but the more I can apply them to every area, like the quicker I seem to move through things.
And I guess it would like depend on the level of not like difficulty, but like importance, like a blog post. You put in a few hours here and there, even if it takes 10 hours for the team to put it together, it's not going to put you under if it doesn't work.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm not sure when or what was like the first project that you sort of like started to like make money, whether you called that a full business or if it was a website you had an idea for. But when was this?
So Silicon Depot was the e-commerce store that I actually helped found out of a family business, and I helped start that e-commerce business. So that was the business where I helped make money. And actually the first, like I would say first huge decision was to move to BigCommerce. And like we agonized over that decision for like a year. And when we finally made the decision, it was like, we should have done this forever ago because everything got better. We instantly started making more money. Just, you know, conversion rate went up, the SEO rankings improved. So the lack of decision velocity in that case really, you know, hurt us. And so I remembered that.
Okay, that makes sense. And I mean, again, I guess that's not it is changing your whole platform of your site, but then looking back on it being like, oh, Jesus, that's what I did wrong. Makes sense. When you say family business, who's involved in this?
Yeah, so my dad started the company in 1978, the parent company, which is called High Tech. And essentially, he started it out of his garage, just packaging silicone sealants and adhesives.
And then you guys decided at some point you should turn it e-commerce?
Yeah, so I got involved in the business 6 or 7 years ago, and I helped influence the business and create the e-commerce store. So actually, it's basically a new part of the business, like a new business unit, essentially.
Right, exactly. I mean, opening it up to like a wider market in a more automated sort of way. So the story here is, there's a story here, the way you go from Silicon Depot over to what you're now running, which is Content Cucumber. Can you tell us this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, at some point down the line with Silicon Depot, I realized that organic marketing was something that we were underutilizing. We were spending a lot of money on paid ads on Google, but we weren't really spending enough resources on building up our organic marketing because that would, you know, ultimately drive down the cost of ads. And so I tried to find a solution where I could just get assigned a writer and be able to request as much as I wanted, and they would just send me my requests back. And, you know, at the time I couldn't find anything like that. It was pretty much either hire a writer, hire an intern, or hire, you know, an Upwork freelancer, which Upwork had kind of been challenging, and it was too much for me to manage. I didn't have enough time for all that. So I had a friend who lived in Argentina at the time, actually, who was the head writer, editor at an agency. I basically convinced him to come start Content Cucumber with me. And yeah, that's pretty much where it started.
Had you seen the business model of Content Cucumber?
I'd seen it in other areas. Like I'd seen it in, you know, graphic design or in video or like in other obviously like in entertainment space, like you see that kind of unlimited model, but I hadn't seen it in content and especially writing at that time. Now there's several now, like we're, you know, there's several now, but at the time I didn't see any other that were doing what I had imagined.
That was sort of a leading question, I'll admit. Because there is a blog post that you wrote about it, like with Design Pickle. And yep. Russ from Design Pickle was on the show like 5 years ago or something, right after.
Okay, cool.
Which is at the time was like, it was this brand new idea of, I guess, what is like, yeah. So it was this idea of the way he did it with design. And now there's a ton of them around in design, but I hadn't seen it with the content side either. But so I guess this ties back to your decision velocity. But I love the idea that you saw something in a different market and then you had a need somewhere else, which was in content, a blog post. And you're just like, wait a minute, what if I just put those two together?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
At this point, were you aware of this decision velocity? Were you like, okay, I'm going to think about this for the next 10 months? Or were you like, no, I'm going to just roll into this?
Well, you know, that's good. That's a good question. I think at that time, I probably wouldn't have framed it. So I wouldn't have packaged it so neatly and called it decision velocity. I probably would have, you know, had a much less elegant way of saying it, but it's essentially the same idea. Yeah. So in a really long way, yes. It's like a screw it, let's just do it type. That's the way I would think of it then, but it's the same idea.
And did you immediately, like, did the company immediately, was it able to support you or did it take time for you to get into it?
What do you mean?
Like I'm trying to, so somebody's listening out there and they like this idea of like seeing a business model and then having another need and being like, whoa, I should put those two together and start my own business. I want to know sort of what your steps were to getting to being this now running full time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, having co-founders was probably the most helpful thing imaginable. So I would urge anyone who wants to start a business to have at least one other co-founder. Well, that's what worked for me. And that's not for everyone, but that would be, if I were to do it again, that would be one element I would absolutely have to have.
What's the benefit?
So you'll have different skill sets and things that you can focus on. One thing that I see happen with a lot of businesses when someone will start a business is they will be the operator. And then they will bring someone, once they start hiring, they'll hire other operators. And so their business will not really start to grow very much because they're just an operator and they'll grow a little bit. But really with, you know, with Isaac being the writer, I actually never wrote blogs or edited blogs or any of that. I focused completely on acquiring new companies and doing marketing and advertising. So 100% of my focus on Content Cucumber was on growth. I've never written a single blog. Actually, no, that's not true. I wrote one blog, but like a year in, and it was for us. It wasn't for a client. So I've never done client work. And that is, I think, almost essential starting a business like this. Because otherwise, if I were in the client work, I may never have focused on growing the business.
Right. So you took over the marketing side. Isaac was the writer. Did he also do the operations?
Well, yeah, that's pretty, I mean, essentially that, it, you know, in the beginning, that was the operations. The operations was taking the requests and writing the content and returning the requests. And then the operation scaled to hiring writers and then promoting them to editors and then hiring more writers. And, you know, now he's basically in the head of the writing team, the head of the operations. And that whole piece is just hiring more writers and editors. And my side is focused on hiring marketers and salespeople and things of that nature.
Right, right. From the operations side, have you or Isaac done that before? Scaled out in that way?
I mean, not exactly. I mean, you know, I had worked on the e-commerce business and I had grown that. So I had knowledge in how to build out an ad campaign. And he had knowledge on how to deliver articles to clients being the lead writer for an agency. So we had some of the skills, but not all the skills. I'd say hiring was the biggest skill that we had to learn that we didn't immediately know. And we also, all of our technology, we had a third co-founder as well, which is Sam. And that's actually Isaac's brother. When we first started the company, Isaac was living with all his brothers, and pretty much all of his brothers pitched in and helped the company in one way or another. And Sam was really a part of like helping us build out the website and doing the design and everything like that. And so now he's, you know, a developer on the team, and that's really, really cool to be able to have that tech piece as well. So
yeah, tech operations and marketing. I mean, what else do you need?
Yeah, well, I would say, you know, soon probably finance, but yeah, that's a really good trinity to start with.
Right. I asked about operations, and I know you're not in it, but you're part of it as one of the co-founders from, I'm sure, at the beginning. But in the productized sort of business sense that you have, the research I've done and people I've talked to in it say it's all about like maximizing that efficiency within operations to be able to obviously take care of clients and take care of like your team, and then also be able to just sort of scale that up.
Yeah. So yeah, that's correct. So I'd say probably knowing how many writers you have and how many like clients they can take on is really important. And then aligning the sales numbers with how many writers we have. I mean, that's really tactical, but that's pretty much how it works. You know, just making sure we have the amount of writers we need to take on the clients that we're adding. And that's pretty much, that's the operations.
And then from a marketing side of it, how did you acquire your first customers?
Yeah, so actually our very, very first customers was from a Slack community called 10X Factory. We actually just got onto that Slack community, and it's like a community of founders. And we went on the community more just to learn from others. Like, we were brand new and we just wanted to know what everyone else was doing. And I just remember having a conversation once, and someone's like, "Oh wait, so you're doing this and it works like that?" And we're like, "Yeah." And he was just like, "Oh, sign me up." I was like, "Okay." So his name is David Tendrick. I still remember that. And I remember we had the call and he was like, "So how many clients do you have?" And I was just like, "Well, you're the first client." He's like, "Oh, cool." So yeah, I still remember that quite well. But then after that, we did an event, and that's where we started getting a lot more clients. We did the IRCE, which was a lot of fun.
Oh, so you attended the event as the team and then got clients from there.
Yeah, we actually went a little crazy on that event. We exhibited at that event, and we bought a Lego castle, which was really cool. And we also booked out a big room right next door to the conference space, and we hosted basically our founding party. Like, we made it a startup party. So that was a lot of fun. I don't know if I'd do that again, but because it was a little expensive, but it was a lot of fun.
Right. And sometimes the fun is worth it. But I guess, like, you weren't, or were you like actively trying to acquire customers at the same time, or were you just trying to have a good party, hoping that would turn in?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we even did a big presentation there talking about the future of Constant Cucumber and our products and everything. And we acquired several customers at the party. So, and I think we got a lot of people to sign up there because they really enjoyed just hanging out with us, and they liked what we were thinking and how we were thinking about our future.
And so both of these methods, being in a Slack group and just meeting somebody and telling them what you do, and then meeting people at a conference and getting them to sign up, it's very hands-on. But how long and how many of the sort of clients roughly did you acquire just through this manual like labor?
Probably in total, I mean, over 100.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, we went to several events, but we got pretty decent at event marketing. And that was actually our 100% of our growth was just, you know, preparing for events. And it was just like this big prep cycle and then doing the events. Now we're doing these big ad campaigns, and we have like a salesperson. And yeah, so it's a lot different now than it was then, but.
But the first 100 clients were you, like no other salesperson?
Well, and Isaac, me and I, pretty much and Sam, I mean, we all contributed because when we went to events, it was like a well-oiled machine, and we're going to do them again eventually because it just right now, you know, we can't do events with COVID going on. But once events come back around again, we'll be doing them. And essentially, we have it down to a bit of a science. So we will prepare a pitch, and the pitch changes every time, but we kind of prepare this pitch and train everyone on the pitch. And we try to make it short, and we try to include questions to engage with the person. And the reason why we do that is because by 4 or 5 o'clock on the floor of selling, you're like so fatigued that it's really good to have a pitch to have memorized. So that way, you know what to say. So that's essentially why we do that. But we kind of have this entire science behind how we do events.
So by pitch, you mean sort of the elevator pitch?
Yeah.
I don't know if I said I wouldn't quiz you, but do you have one off the top of your head?
Yeah. So we help business owners and marketers who, you know, have too much on their plates or are tired of managing freelancers, something to that effect. I don't know. Remember it verbatim. We would practice it over and over and over, and we'd have it verbatim.
And no matter which one of the three they talked to, they got the same pitch.
Yeah, roughly the exact same thing. And then it ends in like, you know, what does your business do? Because a lot of times people walk up to your booth and say, what do you do? And so we wanted everyone to have that down and be saying the same thing. So that was the idea.
Nice. So was this your method up until COVID hit?
Yes. Yeah. 100% of our marketing was through events. We didn't do any advertising at all, which I would classify as probably one of the biggest mistakes we made actually. So
typically, and I've talked to businesses that have been hit by this, and I've talked to other businesses that have grown from this. It's baffling either way, but it seems like people often in your situation were saying to each other or to yourself all like for the last year or something, being like, can we really got to diversify like the way we're acquiring customers? We got to, but it's like, it's working. And of course you're busy doing everything else. Was this something that you had been thinking you needed to diversify without thinking of a pandemic?
Yeah, it was always in the back of our minds, but we were always on to different projects. Our focus was always organic first because we were selling this idea of organic marketing. So we wanted to be doing organic marketing. But of course, organic marketing is a very long strategy. It's not like ads where it's like you put money in the meter and you immediately start getting viewers. So that was a lot of a different strategy. And yeah, when COVID hit, we had to shift because events were off the table. Both the events that we had coming up, actually 3 events, all got wiped out. So yeah, we basically were forced to run ads like we had to.
How long? I know there was a weird, it's been a weird time the whole time, but I mean, there was a time where we didn't really know anything that was happening. So did you guys wait at all in there just to see, or was it you guys just sat down like, okay, we need something else?
I mean, as soon as we saw the writing on the wall for the events being canceled, it was like we were running ads. And the crazy thing is we had made this really good video collateral that we had really used mostly organically. And we were like, man, well, this is great for ad material. So we already had like the creative. It's like we just had to put it together and post it on Facebook ads. And yeah, that's pretty much what we did. I mean, as soon as we saw the writing on the wall.
You didn't worry or concern yourself about like figuring out all the proper ways to do Facebook ads and all the algorithms and stuff?
No, and we're still learning. I think that's another thing with another way of looking at that, like decision velocity idea is like the move fast and break things. And like when you do decide to go, and I would say that I should have moved fast and broke things sooner with ads. I should have done that a long time ago. But then once we did, we kind of just learned by doing it. And I tried not to overthink it. I try not to overthink things or else I end up not doing them at all. Like waiting to run ads for 2 years.
Fair enough. So, and it works for you, right?
Yes. Yeah. So if I decide I'm going to do something, I better do it pretty much right away or else I won't do it.
Did any other part of your sales process or funnel have to change besides just that initial interaction?
Yeah, that changed everything because, I mean, we were used to meeting people in person and then giving us their you know, information and then putting them into a drip campaign or following up with them by calling them. It's just, and now it's okay. Now we have to attract people online and want them to give us information, then maybe book a call with us on Calendly. Oh, excuse me. But maybe book a call with us on Calendly. So that was the entire like shift. Like the whole thing had to shift completely.
Booking the call and the demo, is this due to the fact that you were selling face to face and you assumed or felt like you needed to continue to sell that way?
Yeah, I think it seems like with our price points and with the services, people like to talk to someone. I'm not sure if I'm 100% right on that, but it seems that that's been the way it is. I would say less than 5% of our customer acquisition have been like an e-commerce style where they just go do research and then decide to sign up without talking to anyone.
And when you said you feel like you might not be 100% right, does that matter to you?
Yeah, that's a good question. I suppose there's a part of me that wants to figure out how to make it that e-commerce funnel, like the way, you know, the way Silicon Depot works, where we just put out ads for the product, describe the product, and then people pay for it. I really want to develop that same thing as that Content Cucumber, where you put out ads, you talk about something enticingly, and then people decide to sign up just because of the content that you provided them. It's a puzzle that we haven't been able to solve. I'll put it that way.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And for the time being, this is working. So just sort of keep your head down, keep pushing it out, and you can tweak it as you need to, if needed.
Yeah. Yeah.
When COVID ends at this point, do you think you'll just have two methods of acquiring customers, or will you just go full back into?
We'll have two methods of acquiring clients. And hopefully well on the way to developing that third piece that I had already described to you, that we set up kind of an automated funnel that gets clients automatically.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. All right. Well, this has been fun, Chris. I want to wrap up on one final question for you, if I could. So as entrepreneurs, as sort of like dreamers, we seem to always put our successes or picture our own successes in the future. So in 3 months, when you hit that sales metric, or 6 months, when you get to attend that conference, whatever it happens to be, we know that seconds before you hit that, you're just going to set bigger, loftier goals into the future. So rather than looking forward right now, I'd love it if you can just stop and look behind you at the last couple of years with Content Cucumber and just tell me how you feel about what you've accomplished up until today.
Yeah, I think that it's like chapter one is closed probably at the beginning of this year, and chapter two started at the beginning of this year. And the second chapter has been as exciting as the first chapter, which is crazy because a lot of times you think that initial starting the company is like really, really exciting, and it is. But yeah, the beginning of this year, like 2020 especially, has been super, super fun. And it's mostly because we've been hiring so many talented people. And that's just made working at Content Cucumber just really, really awesome.
I love it. So we've talked about Content Cucumber here. You gave the quick pitch, but can you just specifically tell the listener now, Chris, like, who is your ideal client that you're looking for? And what can you specifically do for them?
Yeah. So the clients that we serve typically are e-commerce companies who are trying to start to utilize organic marketing. So, you know, like a Silicon Depot is probably spending money on ads and wants to find other ways of attracting customers. So writing blogs, also some other brand development, like people who want to develop new products, like startups and things of that nature. And then we also serve agencies who use our service to provide blogs for their clients. So those are pretty much the biggest ones. So we do product descriptions, web copy, blogs, and email newsletters are primarily what we do. And blogs are probably make up the majority of what we write.
Awesome, man. Awesome. ContentCucumber.com is the site. I'll link to that in the show notes for everybody. You're also on Instagram and possibly Twitter, Chris?
Yeah, and also LinkedIn as well.
Okay, perfect. So you can track Chris down there or Content Cucumber. You can ask Chris more questions if you want, or just sign up for the service in the way that Chris is hoping you will, without having to get on a call with him.
Well, you can also schedule a demo, and product specialists would be happy to chat with you.
Awesome. I will track down social media links and anything we've talked about today, and I'll get it for you in the show notes so it's easy for you to track down. Besides that, Chris, thanks so much for stopping by. I wish you continued success and growth with Content Cucumber, and just thanks for sharing so openly and keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, well, that was a lot of fun. I hope you enjoyed that nearly as much as I did. It was fascinating, the sudden shift that Chris had to take with their business and with Content Cucumber. Since this whole COVID madness has started, that's most businesses have had to shift in some way. But losing your, like, 100% the way that you are attracting and acquiring new clients, losing that because you do that in person and that's just what you've done and you've gotten really good at it, and having that pulled out from under you is, I mean, it's sudden and you just have to react. And I love the way Chris this is just what we have to do. And they knew where they had to go because they'd already been thinking about it. They just hadn't actually taken that leap. It's a fascinating thing, the way us as humans and the way us as business owners have had to adapt in these situations. We don't talk about it as much on this show as some shows, but if you are looking for another show to listen to right now, I'm just going to drop my friend has a show called Change of Plans Podcast. And they literally just talk. He's a super smart entrepreneur, and he just talks to people about businesses that have had to completely pivot into something else during this time and the ups and downs of that and what they've learned. Change of Plans Podcast can be found anywhere you're listening to your podcast right now. So as I said at the end of the interview, hacktheentrepreneur.com is our website. Head over there and you will see Chris's show notes. You can track him down, social media, everything we've talked about. As well as I'll get the Design Pickle link over there for you, because that was kind of where this whole Content Cucumber thing started. And I was lucky enough to interview him years and years and years ago. So I'll link that if you want to jump back in the archives and check it out. And while you're there, hey, get on the email list. Why not? Say hi. All right. Thank you so much for stopping by. I hope you enjoy the rest of your week. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.